This week on the eBay for Business podcast.
Honestly, like everybody thinks, well, I can do it myself. Even if you're just a side hustle, making $10,000-$15,000, bringing it in, hire a professional. They're there to help you. And especially seek out one who's familiar with online sellers. That's really, really going to help you. That will save you more money than what you will actually pay them.
I'm selling on eBay for the last, 2 years or so. At the beginning, just selling a little part of the booing process. And it grew from there because it turned out that the little pressure controlling device in the booing business, they call it a spunding valve. The spunding valve that I made is apparently the best in the world.
I'm Brian.
I'm Griff, and this is the eBay for Business podcast, your weekly source for the information and inspiration you need to start, run, and grow a business on the world's most powerful marketplace. And this is episode 139, and back again with us this week is Brian Burke. Hello, Brian.
Hello, Griff. How are you?
I'm okay. It was a busy week. Okay, we got that out of the way.
It was a busy week. Just like I think 2 weeks ago, it was a busy week.
It's always busy. It's busy. It's a busy world, even though we're working from home.
Oh, but it's some exciting stuff happened this week for our sellers, and it was overall a good week.
Yeah, that's coming up in the news. But in the meantime, why don't you tell the people who's on deck for our episode this week?
First up is tax expert Adam Beasley with advice for sellers on getting their tax returns ready. Then you'll be conversing with one of our four recent up-and-running grant winners, Trong Nguyen.
Yes, Trong is an inventor, a maker, if you will. And he sells what he makes, his inventions, on eBay with incredible success, by the way. And after we're finished talking with Trong, we have a few questions from sellers that you and I will answer. But first, Brian, what's in the news for this week?
First up, eBay has expanded the standard envelope shipping service to include postcards, stamps, coins, and paper money, as well as trading cards. The eBay standard envelope service gives sellers a more secure way to ship than with a stamp. With tracking integrated into the label, and with automatic tracking uploaded to the order, sellers of these items will finally be able to meet the qualifications for top-rated seller. The eBay standard envelope service can save a seller up to 70% off competitive services like USPS First Class. You can learn more by reading the announcement post in Seller News, the link to which we'll put in the transcript for episode 139.
Well, that's definitely good news.
The other thing that happened was eBay announced the 2021 first quarter earnings last week. Q1 was another strong business quarter with 24% gross merchandise value growth and continued expansion of our buyer audience, which helps all of our sellers. So once again, our sellers remain the driving force of our platform, and we're grateful for your role in this success.
Oh, absolutely. And we'll put a link to that announcement as well and to the earnings results page in the transcript for episode 139.
And that's the eBay news for this week. And I'll be back at the end of the episode to help you answer seller questions. But until then, it's tax time.
It's the time of year we all wait for impatiently. No, I don't mean summer vacation. It's tax time. Don't despair. Joining us now is EA, that means enrolled agent, Adam Beasley. His business is called Adam Up. Adam and his co-host Derek Everett have their own podcast called Death Piles and Taxes. Both of them sell on eBay. Adam, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, Griff, thanks so much for having me. And by impatiently, you mean this is the greatest time of year. It's time to file your taxes.
It's just about a month away. In fact, it's a little less than a month away now, and 2 weeks by the time this podcast airs.
May 17th is the deadline.
May 17th. What's the first thing an eBay seller who may not have been prepared at all, what's the first thing they should do?
Well, I tell everybody, I says, I hope that you owe a lot of money in taxes because that means that you made a lot of money.
Yes.
That's always the first thing. But like you said, it's just knowing your numbers. And the simple thing to that is having one bank account and one credit card. A lot of times now these credit card, they'll give you a year-end statement. Same thing with your banking stuff. It's a lot easier to do that when you're trying to not intermingle all kinds of funds that are not eBay related. So that's something that really easily helps people get prepared.
Do you find in your business that a lot of businesses have too many credit cards and too many bank accounts?
People overthink things. They think, well, I need this bank account for paying my taxes. I need this bank account for buying goods. It just way overcomplicates it. So one bank account, one credit card, it doesn't have to be a business credit card. It just has to be a card dedicated solely for that business.
Right. It's not something you use to go out to dinner if you're going out to dinner yet, or for buying personal things.
Yes. But a lot of times that's what I try and tell people is if you're going to dinner, that is a very good chance of being a business expense, especially when you're making money.
It's just about 2 weeks away. You got a seller who's totally overwhelmed. What can they do?
Honestly, like everybody thinks, well, I can do it myself. Even if you're just a side hustle, making $10,000-$15,000, bringing it in, hire a professional. They're there to help you. And especially seek out one who's familiar with online sellers. That's really, really going to help you because they'll guide you in the right direction as knowing, well, what about this, your percentage of your utilities, things that you won't think of that will save you more money than what you will actually pay them. That's the first thing I tell people.
You're an accountant. You have a business. Can people contract with you if they're not in your area? I know you live in Utah.
I do taxes for people all over the country. So the podcast that we do, we talk in a long format about taxes, about what we sell online. We're real big into sports cards, vintage t-shirts, all those kind of things. But people contact us. Picked up some clients in Michigan, Texas, Hawaii, all over this past year. So we do stuff remotely all over the country and all over the world, actually.
I know some sellers who may be overwhelmed and not ready have another out. I know I've used it in the past. It's called filing for an extension. Is it something you recommend? And if so, how does it work?
Yes. So there is one thing that people need to understand. Everyone can file for an extension. No one can file for an extension on making your payments. The extension is to file. So what you should do is if you're going to file an extension, you need to send out a very good guess of how much you're going to owe. And usually I tell people overestimate it and you'll get that money back. If you don't decide to do that, you will be penalized. And again, depending on how much you owe, it could be pretty severe.
What are the requirements for an eBay seller when it comes to something like quarterly filing for self-employment tax?
Anytime you're going to owe more than $1,000 at the end of the year, you should be filing quarterly payments. So that's kind of the basis for a sole proprietor Schedule C on estimated payments. The big question is now as people are getting into it, because you and I both know, Griff, you can do this full time. There's some big dollars to be made. And if you're a reseller and you're getting over those thresholds where your net income is more than $40,000-$50,000, you're definitely want to going to look into becoming an S corporation.
What is an S corporation?
So an S corporation allows you to really save on that self-employment tax. If somebody tells me they're an LLC, that's great. That's fine. But it means nothing to the IRS. So if you're a sole proprietor and your net income is $100,000, not income, not state income, just in self-employment tax, you're looking at $15,000. If you are an S corporation, same instance, we netted $100,000, your self-employment tax would be about between $4,000 to $5,000. So it's a significant way to save taxes and all of the filing requirements, because there's a lot that you need to do. You need a W-2. You need to pay yourself a dividend. There's several things that happen, but those are all things that accountants will gladly take care of for you. And it helps you out a lot.
I've worked on the boards of a couple of corporations. One was a nonprofit. And if you're a corporation, you'd have to have a board of directors and you'd have to have meetings and you have to keep minutes. Is that the same for an S corporation?
No, that's the best part. That's why you're an LLC S corporation. All of those board of directors, those yearly minutes, all of those things, they're not required. So that's why it makes it so much easier. And S corporations are audited less than 0.5% of the time. So it really brings out that audit question that a lot of times people have, especially as a sole proprietor and you're bringing $100,000, $200,000, $300,000. It really takes that aspect out because the IRS now looks at you like you're in a legitimate business. You're both. You're an LLC taxed as an S corporation. That is the best go-to business format for people, like I said, that are net income more than, I said, about $40,000 to $50,000 and increasing over the next few years.
What's the first step to becoming an S corporation?
Find a good accountant.
Of course.
That is the absolute best thing. Do not set it up on your own. I tell everybody that. You're so much better to do it right the first time. So find a good accountant where you're at locally, and they will lead you, guide you, help you make sure to do the right things.
Is it expensive to incorporate?
Depending on the state, usually it's anywhere from $500 to $1,000. But like I said, those built-in costs that I'm talking about net income, 40, 50,000, that's when you're going to save more money than you're going to spend on taxes. That's the only time I set them up for people. I'm not in the business of just setting things up. I'm in the business of making sure people save tax dollars.
Exactly. What are the most important things in your mind a seller should be doing to keep prepared or to be prepared for next year's tax filing?
Well, the crazy part is I've had to turn into a real jack of all trades. Congress changes everything last week. It's they call it kind of like tax season is like you're riding a bicycle trying to get to the finish line and the IRS throws gasoline on you and lights you on fire. Like planning is a key part. And one of the big things, especially as being self-employed, is health insurance. And Obamacare is a great way to kind of plan for that, but you have to have income limitations and there's so many things that go into it. So that's the first thing is A, find out what kind of health insurance you're going to have because that ties into your business. Well, I said, then if you're a legitimate business, let's really look at putting money into like a simple IRA, a SEP IRA, because you know you can save between yourself $6,000 and a spouse $6,000. And in tax savings, we're really talking anywhere between 20 to 35%, depending on how much money you make. So planning for vehicles, potentially writing off a vehicle, potentially writing off mileage, you know, storage space. A lot of times is you need to treat it like a real business.
What are the most common assumptions or missed opportunities made by small businesses, like the kind of people who sell on eBay, when it comes to, for example, deductible business expenses that they're not taking, or if they are, they're taking incorrectly?
A trip to Hawaii is not tax deductible to you. You can't write off and go negative. That really shouldn't be happening because it's hobby. If you're legitimately making money, then you can count that trip to wherever you went and sourced and bought some things because you're making money. But it's always mileage. Mileage is going to be your biggest real expense. Your other one is actually cost of goods sold. Mileage, if you're doing everything, it's 56 and a half cents per mile. Actually tracking real miles, that's a huge helpful thing because every time you do it, it saves you money. Some people are really funny about buying things. They try to overthink it, meaning, well, I bought this lot of shirts and how much was my actual cost per thing? It doesn't matter because your buy-in price is so minimal. So cost of goods sold all depends on how much time and effort you want to track your items to kind of see your profitability. Don't overthink it. Keep it simple. One thing that changed this year is meals are now going to be written off at a 100% rate. When we come out to San Jose and we come see you and we're going to go hang out to the Goodwill and we take you out to dinner to get some good shrimp, we'll pay for it, but we're going to get 100% deduction on that meal now versus before we would only got 50%. That's a big one because Congress wants these small businesses to come back. So it's a little encouragement for us as self-employed people to spend money in the local economy and buy meals.
Is there a cap on a single meal? I mean, I could take somebody out to the French Laundry and spend easily $2,000.
There is. It has to be ordinary and necessary. I usually tell people, again, it depends on how much money you're making, but $100, $200, $300, depending on the amount of the people in the party, is really what we can deem ordinary and necessary.
What do you recommend if you're seeing a new business come into you about how they keep track of their expenses and their income? Is there something that you recommend commonly, like a piece of software?
Again, it all depends on your sales volume, like how much money you're bringing in, because it's hard to say, well, can I warrant a software that costs $100 a month if I'm only bringing in $1,000 a month? There's several ones that I like. GoDaddy Bookkeeping is a really good one for resellers that are only bringing in, you know, a couple thousand, say less than 20,000.
I use that. I've loved that. I've used it for years.
I use QuickBooks Online. And the reason I like it is how simplistic it is. It integrates with everything. Like when I go through my monthly stuff, because I'm really big into sports cards right now. I sell a lot of sports cards. Right now, I'll send stuff off to PSA. They're a grading company. So when I go through my credit card, it automatically already categorizes it. Every time I go to the French Laundry, it tells me meals and entertainment. I mean, it saves a lot of time. And then also it integrates, if you are an S corporation, it does your payroll for you. It automatically does your W-2 wage. And now it's so easy, like it automatically does it. It automatically makes your tax payments. I mean, it's just making life a lot simpler, these integrated good services. So,
Adam, I'm going to put the links to both your business landing page and the podcast, which again, Adam has a podcast with his co-host or partner, Derek Everett. It's called Death Piles and Taxes. Thanks again, Adam.
I really appreciate it, Griff. Thank you.
Adam, again, has a podcast called Death Piles and Taxes. He's also an enrolled agent, and we'll put the links both to his business and to the podcast in our episode transcript for episode 139. We talked to the first of the four most recent winners of the Up and Running Grant series. We talked to Victor Rivera. And today we're going to talk to seller number two, who is a winner of the Up and Running Grants. His name is Trong Nguyen. Welcome, Trong.
Hi.
Trong, tell us a little bit about what you do on eBay.
We basically sell special tools that I actually created or invented, manufactured myself for pressure brewing in small batch.
So like I can brew beer at home?
Yes, you can brew just about anything at home. And I think the reason my operation and my business on eBay has been very successful because I'm basically the only one that can have this particular system to brew beer using very little equipment and can brew it right in your home kitchen using everything that you have in your kitchen, your stove, your oven, your refrigerator, and brew beer. So I'm inventing something called brewware that you can brew beer, kombucha, hard cider, anything, fermentation under pressure.
I like kombucha, so I'd be interested in that.
Or to make wonderful kombucha, I can show you how.
What was your interest or your passion or what led you to start this?
I was a retired scientist and I work lab science and start my own business. I started a bakery in Sacramento in the early 70s and it became a chain, a small chain in started in 1981. So long ago, I don't even remember. 1981, what I was making were croissants. And you know, back in the 70s and 80s, croissants was like a foreign thing in the US, but it's been around in Europe for hundreds of years. And when I was a graduate student at UC Davis, every now and then we have to go to Berkeley for a seminar or visit the library there. And there was a wonderful bakery that make croissants called Eclair Bakery on Telegraph Avenue. And they make the best croissants. So every time I went there, I just bought a few croissants, took home to the lab and shared with the people. And I found myself every ensuing trip, I always get more and more croissants of people in the lab. And, you know, this is back in the 70s where we were a graduate student and Nixon was the president and we went through the oil embargo. And the first thing Nixon did was cut research grant and we really didn't know what we're going to do after we graduate. So we often joke if we couldn't find a job, maybe we should open a croissant bakery because everybody loved that stuff so much.
Of course, so, yes. You saw a business opportunity and you took it.
But the thing is, I never make croissants. So after graduate school, I went to Washington, D.C. to run a research lab in Bethesda, Maryland. And, you know, every day I walk by from my apartment to my lab and I want to go to this shopping mall. And there was a French bakery there. And every morning I came by and always buy I bought a croissant and take to the lab, but I'm always curious about how to make croissants. So one morning I went through, the people at the French bakery told me they had no croissants today. I said, so what happened? Well, we had a Vietnamese refugee starting the job last week and he didn't do something the day before, so there's no croissants. I'm sorry for today, but you come back tomorrow. I said, well, you know, I'm Vietnamese. I can go in the back and explain to your Vietnamese baker what to do. I said, sure. So the owner took me back and introduced me to the Vietnamese old guy, and I explained to him what he had to do the day before. Soon enough, the owner of the bakery turned to me and said, hey, you want to work here? Well, I said, sure, but I can only work on weekend because, you know, I already have a full-time job. I wanted to work because I wanted to learn how to make croissants. And I got a job. I work on weekends. And in a short time, I learned the art of making croissants. And then after about 3 months or so, I decided now I learned the tricks, you know, really from all the professional there, the French baker there. So I left Washington, D.C. area, went back to California and opened a croissant bakery.
You are one entrepreneur.
Of course, you know, it took me like a year because I really didn't have a whole lot of money. So I found an old place downtown Sacramento, and I had to kind of fix up everything. And if the place is so old that everything I touched, it broke. So it took like almost a year for me to build a bakery. And finally, I got it to work. And people just loved the croissants that I made. And people waited in line for a long time. And it became kind of like a sensational story in Sacramento back in the early 80s. And that thing, how they grew. And now I thought maybe I can start this croissant bakery to keep my refugee brother's job, because they're refugees, so I was responsible for them. So they would take over the business and I would go back to be a scientist. But the business took up so much that I got stuck there for like 30 years.
So your career in science was a little bit put off for a while.
Yeah, but, you know, in the bakery, I kind of treat it like a laboratory. So I invent all kinds of things, you know, and I'm a kind of tinkerer, an inventor, so inventing all sort of things. And finally, when I retire, I say, well, maybe I put some of my invention to work. And I was always in the bakery, you deal with fermentations and with bread and with yeast. And I thought that maybe I should learn how to use my knowledge to make beer. So I started making beer at home. And the traditional process of making beer takes a lot of time, energy, natural resources, because people typically brew beer in 5 or 10 gallons, you know, and they take a lot of heat to boil 5 or 6 gallon of wort. So they have to do that in the driveway or in the garage. And so my wife told me that, you know, we were in the middle of drought in California. So she said, well, you got to figure out a better way of doing that, because that's just waste too much natural resources. So I started thinking, maybe I can rethink the whole process. And what I found out was, if we can just make them in small batches, and in small batches, we can create a fermenter where we can ferment under pressure. When we ferment under pressure, there's a lot of advantages. Is that number one, you cannot get contaminated by bad thing, because the pressure inside is positive. So bad bug cannot go in, right? That's number one. Number two is, since you ferment it in a small container, you can actually boil your wort. And then after it's done processing your hops and all the things that you want to do, you can just seal it and use the heat to sterilize the whole process, so that you never have to use chemicals. And then you don't have to be hurried when to ferment. You just let it take its time to cool down, because it's sealed under hot conditions. So it's kind of like a can of tuna. So nothing can go inside. Now, if you're in a hurry, because it's sealed, you take the whole thing and you throw in your swimming pool, and 20 minutes later, that thing cooled down. You fish it up.
Wait, you throw it into the swimming pool, which it presumes that you have one.
Yes, and it only takes 20 minutes to cool the thing down, or you can wait a week later to open it up to put the yeast in. When you put the yeast in, you seal it back again, and I made a little device so that it can control the fermentation pressure created by the yeast, and I capture the CO2 gas to carbonate the beer during the fermentation process. So at the end of the fermentation, the beer almost carbonated. And all you have to do is stick the whole thing in the refrigerator, chill it out for 24 hours, put on a little tap, and pour yourself a beer. So the whole process, you can brew right in your kitchen. Very easy to clean up. And then you have beer 7 days later.
What is the yield with the device?
I have three systems. One that you can brew 5 liters. Another one, you can brew 2.5 gallons. Basically 1 gallon, 2.5 gallon, and 4 gallons.
And you can season it, or you can brew it the way you want, right?
Oh, yeah. Actually, I proposed a talk to this year's American Home Brewer Association convention. And the title of my talk is How to Make Home Brewing the New Home Baking. Because, you know, like in America, there is no statistic for how many people who bake at home, because they're assuming just about half of the home will do some sort of baking.
Yeah, especially after the pandemic.
Yes, for the pandemic, sometimes you couldn't even buy yeast or flour.
No, you couldn't. It was all sold out.
So that basically my passion now is to somehow ton millions of people around the world who can brew beer in their little apartment, whether they're in Berlin or Brooklyn or San Francisco or China or Singapore, and anybody can brew beer because you don't really need a whole lot. You need like a pot.
You create the device that people can buy, and they can buy this on eBay.
Yes, I'm selling on eBay for the last, 2 years or so. At the beginning, just selling a little part of the brewing process. And it grew from there because it turned out that the little pressure controlling device in the brewing business, they call it a spunding valve. The spunding valve that I made is apparently the best in the world. I have sent it everywhere. I have sent my spunding valve all over the world. I actually sell it in a lot in Northern Europe, sell in Australia, sell to Russia. Everybody want to buy my spunding valve. I actually sell more overseas than sell in the U.S. because the people in Northern Europe and in Australia, they're more into pressure brewing, my fermentation under pressure. And that was my specialty, fermenting under pressure in small batch.
For the homeowners, the people who are going to be home baking, home brewing.
Yeah, the millennial, the old guy like me and women and the people living in a small dwelling can enjoy brewing beer.
Well, that begs the question. We're just making an assumption, but I'm assuming you're a beer drinker.
Oh, yes. I drink beer. Actually, my mother-in-law drink beer. My wife drink beer. And not only that, they also brew it because my mother-in-law, she's like 86 years old, and sometimes I'm lazy, I don't brew enough beer. And she said, if you don't, I'm going to brew it because I watch the way how you brew beer. It's a lot easier than cook a pot of pho, the Vietnamese
pho. Sure, yeah.
A lot easier than brewing pho.
You mentioned that you're from Vietnam. Did you come from Vietnam to America when you were young?
Yes, I came to the U.S. when I was 17 years old, to go to school. I went to school at Sac State, and I managed to leave the country before I turned 18 because in Vietnam at the time, if you turn 18, you get drafted. You had to go in the military. Yeah.
Did you know when you were very young what you wanted to do?
I've always, lived in the countryside, and my father was a military man. So he moved from different part of the country. And of course, Vietnam back in the early days, countryside was just a place to discover. There's so many nature and wildlife. And so I was kind of a naturalist and also observed natures. And I grew up, I wanted to be a biologist or a scientist. And one of the things I'm very impressed about is the Swiss Army knife, because it's one of my favorite tools. A Swiss Army knife is something that's so well built and you can do so many things. If people ask me, what do you want to grow up? And I want someday inventing something like a Swiss Army knife that everybody can use and everybody could benefit now. The device that I use for making beer, typically called spunding valve, but I call it spundit, S-P-U-N-D-I-T, spundit. And basically, I call it the Swiss Army spunding valve. Because I can do so many things.
You realized your dream. That's amazing. It sounds like this is really taking off and you're very successful. You were one of the four grant winners for the Up and Running grant program out of thousands of entries that were submitted. What was your entry like?
It's a straightforward series of questions that we have to answer. And I answered that I was brewing beer, actually teaching home brewing at my home brewer lab in Sacramento, and the pandemic put an end to that. So I started to increase my selling activity on eBay, and that sort of took off. And there was some fellow in Sweden who did a video. He was kind of influencer, and actually unbeknown to me that he did the story. He got my spunded a year before that, and he called it the title, the best spunding valve I have ever tried. So because after that thing came out, my sale on eBay kind of rocketed, and then I add a few other devices. Actually, it's a very exciting time for me right now because we happen to be one of the grantees from eBay Grantee, and I use that fund to actually make a number of improvements on my devices. And some of the things that coming out is really cool. Now, if you allow me, I'd love to pitch my thing with what I had on eBay.
Please do. I thought we were pitching all along, but go ahead.
No, this is a new thing that we developed using the grant money. And when you make beer in a tight container under pressure, you have to draw the liquid beer out. And traditionally, they have something called a dip tube. The dip tube is something that goes from the top down to the bottom. So that way, that when you force the beer out, in the end, it's going to push all the liquid out, let you get all the liquid out.
Sure.
The problem with that, because the opening of the tube is way at the bottom, when you stop dispensing your beer, the first glass or two of beer is very cloudy and full of yeast and hop and almost undrinkable. And you have to wait a long time for the beer to clear. So instead of a rigid dip tube go to the bottom, I have a flexible tube that connects to a floater. And therefore, it actually draw liquid from near the surface. So therefore, you can start drinking your clear beer sooner, right? And in the business, we call that a floating dip tube.
And did you invent this?
No, this concept has been around for a long time, but I made improvement on that.
Of course.
To make it work better than other dip tubes on the market. And I call that thing floated.
Like spun it, and now you have floated.
Everything I do have an IT in the back, you know, spun it, floated.
So you've used the grant money to do this. Do you have a product now? I mean, you've really moved very quickly.
Yes, because, you know, you cannot invent anything overnight. You've been thinking about this, you know, for over the time. And then you're saying, well, if I had the resource, if I could, you know, have the money, I would do this and do that. And when you get the little resource, you get to move on it. And the thing happened rather quickly. So I've been selling the floated on eBay, and I've been selling really, really well. And I just introduced that like the middle part of last year. But with the grant money, I'm ready to introduce Floated 2.0. The Floated 2.0 is really, really cool. I think it is the ultimate floating dip tube because I add a double filter inlet. I put two layers of screen filter. The first one is 500 microns, and then inside of it, the second stage is the 300 microns. So it allows you to suck the beer out early, but without any hops and without any yeast, any sediment, because it's screen. Now, during brewing process, if you want to draw a little beer out to test for gravity, traditionally, you're not advised to do that because when you do during fermentation, you suck out all kind of junk and that's going to clog up your valves. So by having the screen, you can actually take a little sample out to test for gravity during the fermentation process. That's the benefit number one. The benefit number two is when the beer is finished, the way I designed this floating dip tube, when it lands on the bottom, and in the business, we call it the yeast cake, because all the yeast laying down like a pancake at the bottom. And when the double filter inlet lands on the yeast cake, it lands right next to the yeast cake so that you draw almost all beer out without any beer left inside. So the slogan for Floated 2.0 is no beer left behind.
Now, a lot of our listeners tuned in and had no idea they were going to get such a long and detailed a tutorial on how to make beer. But if you're a beer drinker and you're interested in brewing beer at home, then you should check out Trong's listings. And we're going to put the link in the transcript so you can check it out. I've just been checking out the Spundit. And that's a really cool device.
Now, if you're not beer drinking yet, you should start brewing beer because it's really easy. I can turn you into a home brewer like just overnight.
Trong, we have learned a lot about your products, and you are one inventive and enterprising eBay seller. And congratulations so much on your win for the up and running grant, and continued success to you.
Thank you, Griff.
Trong Nguyen sells on eBay under the user ID Trongo, and we've been talking to him as our second up and running grant winner for the recent up and running grants, which were awarded a few months ago.
You got questions?
We got answers.
How many questions in the old mailbag this week, Griff?
Well, let's see, Brian. I'll just rummage around in the old mailbag. Why? We have three questions to answer.
Oh, great.
Would you like to read the first one? Here.
Sure. I will be happy to read the first one. Okay, this was sent by eBay seller Tracy to podcast@ebay.com. And Tracy writes, "Hello all. Love, love, love the podcast. I've learned so much from you, Griff. My question is about UPS shipping. I have no problem using it with the desktop version of the eBay site, but it does not appear as an option on the mobile version. I'm a reasonably intelligent person, but haven't figured this out. What am I doing wrong? Thank you, Tracy Meisner, JT Meiss, owner of a temperamental thermal label printer." Oh, that's great news too. Well, thanks, Tracy. So remember to send us your shipping address so we can mail you a mug.
She knows how to do this on a desktop, so she probably has the policy set up. It's just selecting that policy when she's on the mobile version. So
yeah, and you know what's interesting, Griff? I do most of my listing on the desktop. And so this, like selecting this on the from a mobile, I am less familiar with.
Yeah. I'm going to assume, Tracy, that you know how to create a shipping policy for UPS so that you can offer that service. Because if you can do it on your desktop, that means you've already set up the policy. But when you list an item on the mobile device, when you get to the section that says delivery, there's a little pencil icon. And if you click that, you'll be able to select from your existing list of business policies. And when you click it, there should be an option for selecting a business policy. It'll give you all of the options that you have on your desktop. And if you created that one for UPS, it should be there. But you have to click through that pencil option in order to see that, and then it'll show up. But in the meantime, I want to tell other sellers who may be listening that the only shipping options that are going to show up in that delivery section of whatever listing flow you're using, by the way, it could be a mobile app or it could be your browser on a laptop or desktop. The only ones that show up are the options that you previously created as separate shipping business policies.
And you have to create those on the desktop, web-based view of eBay, correct?
Correct. When you click on the little edit pencil that I just mentioned, the delivery section of the List Your Item page in the mobile app, you'll see a little info alert that says, to edit or create a new policy, use a web browser instead.
So that means like, because I'm oftentimes on my iPad as well. So the same would be true there. I'd have to go to the web version on my iPad.
Right. And it's easier on an iPad to use a web browser than it is on your phone.
So Tracy could use a web browser on her mobile device to create a new shipping business policy.
Yeah, you can because, you know, there's web browsers on mobile phones like Apple iPhone or, an Android phone, but they're hard to use. And it's so much easier to just do that sort of thing like create business policies using a web browser on your desktop or laptop computer. My advice to any seller is if they're not aware of this is to just go to Seller Hub in a web browser and then on the listings tab, look on the left-hand side of the listings page, and there's a link there for business policies. Click it, and then follow the instructions there for creating a new shipping policy for shipping via UPS, just like Tracy already did.
And you know what I think I'm going to do? Right. I think the next listing I'm going to do is I'm going to do it all from my iPad and go right through this process.
I just shipped my first item using UPS.
Really?
It was the cheapest option. It was a cast iron enamel, huge 8-quart stew pot.
It doesn't surprise me that it was a heavy item because I find that when it's a larger item or a heavy item,
yeah,
I use UPS.
Yeah, and I've never used them before, and it was way cheaper. All I had to do is just drop it off at the UPS store, which is not far from here. So anyway.
So we kind of got off the beaten track there a little bit, Griff.
A little bit, yeah.
So once you've created that new policy, it'll show up as an option for the delivery section of a create listing page in either a web browser or in the eBay mobile app.
Exactly. I think it's time to move on to our next question. Tracy, don't forget to send us your shipping address. Our next question is from eBay seller John, who sent the following to podcast@ebay.com. Hello, thank you for the podcast. It's an amazing educational tool and very entertaining. Oh, flattery will get you everywhere. My question is, can you list an item in multiple categories? Thanks again for all the assistance, John Hayes.
Well, thanks, John. And don't forget to email us your shipping address as well so we can send you a podcast mug. You can indeed select a second category for a listing, but only in a web browser accessing ebay.com. The option is not available in the eBay mobile app.
That's true. And there are extra fees for listing in a second category, so you have to keep that in mind.
Given there's extra fees, Griff, is there an advantage to listing in two categories?
Oh, Brian, what do you think? I was going to say, I'm not sure. But I have to tell you, I would never use two categories, especially now that we have this really robust list of item specifics for each item and category. And that's going to help capture your item a lot better than listing one item in two categories. It's kind of a holdover from the early days of eBay when there wasn't such things as item specifics. So I would always use the single category that is most appropriate. And then I would fill in those item specifics and I would leave it with that. But if a seller really wants to list a single item in two categories, knock yourself out. That option is still available.
And that second category will cost you more. And we'll take the money.
Yeah.
We will.
I don't know why anyone would want to give us extra money. I tell people all the time, don't use a second category only because why do you want to give eBay extra money? Same thing with making like your listing title bold. That's $5. You can spend that wisely somewhere else.
You know, if you really think it's important to list in two categories or use bold, remember we have 187 million buyers on our platform today buying your items. So test. Try it without. Try it with. If you find there's value, you can always do it. But I think, Griff, you're likely right listing in two categories, especially with item specific.
So our third question is a two-parter from eBay seller Greg, who wrote to podcast at ebay.com with the following. Hello, podcast team. I have two questions for you today. I've been selling on eBay for over a decade now, but primarily doing it as a hobby. I'm making the transition this year to actually ramping up to be a business. In your opinion, what is the best business software that will include all the basic features that I need? My goal would be to take the information from my software and turn it over to my tax man at the end of the year. My second question is concerning the e-commerce tax code and any major changes coming. Do we know or anticipate any major changes to the 200 sales to $20,000 rule? Love the show. P.S. Don't forget my mug. Greg, eBay Store, Utah 12 Man. That's Utah 1-2 Man. Well, thanks, Greg. And don't forget to send us your shipping address because we can't send you that mug without it. And to answer your second question first, we have no information about any changes to the 1099K qualifications.
Those qualifications, by the way, are for every payment processor a seller or merchant uses in a calendar year, at least 200 or more process payments, and a gross amount of $20,000 or more in total payment amounts.
That's right, Brian. And if you're less with the processor for that year, you're not going to get a 1099K. That doesn't mean you don't have to report your taxes. It's just that the processor is not sending a record of those payments to the IRS. When they do, you have to make sure that everything reconciles because the IRS it's kind of like a pre-warning to the IRS. Hey, this seller, they processed $20,000 through our processor and they had over 200 payments. So, and I got to remind everyone, eBay Payments and PayPal are considered two separate payment processes. So unless you were part of eBay Payments for the entire 2020 calendar year, it's possible your gross sales for 2020 are spread across both eBay Payments and PayPal.
And if that is the case, if you process less than $20,000 in both, you will not receive a 1099K from either one. Even if you had more than 200 payments processed in both, you have to meet both the number of payments and the minimum dollar amount.
And Greg, any changes to the tax code would come from the IRS website, and we would not have pre-announcement information from the IRS to share.
So, Griff, what software would we recommend to Greg? I mean, I think it's fantastic that he's taken the step to move it towards a business.
Yes, I forgot. There's a second part of the question, the first part. Greg, I recommend two options, and I'll put the links to both of them in our transcript for 139. The first one I've been using since it was a separate product called Outright. And it's now known as GoDaddy Bookkeeping Online, and it is a great option for online bookkeeping. It connects directly with the banks of your choice, the payment processors of your choice, the credit cards, and it interfaces directly with eBay. Pulls in all your eBay data on a regular basis. You don't have to like check it or do it yourself. Anytime during the year, you can go in and check how things are going. The other one that a lot of sellers use and is also just as tied to eBay and any of your banks or credit cards is QuickBooks Online. The sellers who use QuickBooks Online swear by it. I have to confess that I haven't used but I'm really kind of hooked on GoDaddy Online Bookkeeping right now. But both of those options are the most popular. There may be others, but I'm going to just recommend those two because I know from my own experience that those are the two that sellers use. Check out either one of those.
You can always hop out into the eBay community. And if you go into the discussion boards, there's a tools discussion board under buying and selling. And you can also ask other sellers what their opinions are, and you can get multiple opinions there.
Yeah, that's true.
You have a question. why not send it to us here?
Why not? You can
either call us on 888-723-4630.
That's 888-723-4630.
Or if you're not a call on the phone person, you can always email us at podcast@ebay.com. That's podcast@ebay.com.
It's time for your daily podcast to-do list.
Check the announcement board for up-to-date seller news.
Don't forget.
Oh no, here it comes.
Send us your question or comment to podcast@ebay.com or call it in to 888-723-4630 along with your shipping address so that if we use your question or comment, we can send you an official eBay for Business podcast mug suitable for the beverage of your choice.
For a moment, I thought that for sure you were going to say...
And buy a thermal printer.
Do you know, I have to say you're making some inroads.
Am I?
I've seen some comments about thermal printers on the podcast blog page and elsewhere.
Oh, good. That's good to hear. Did you hear our episode last week? We had Daniel Gallagher, who is a seller of thermal printers, refurbished and new, and we interviewed him at the last eBay Open in 2019, and I totally misplaced the interview, and I found it.
Yeah, it was a great interview.
Yeah, that's it.
I knew you'd come back to thermal printers eventually.
I can't help myself.
So check out the transcript for this and all episodes for follow-up on what you've heard and to see the links we referenced during the episode.
We'd like again to thank our guests for this week, Adam Beasley of Adam Up, and eBay seller and up-and-running grant winner, Trong Nguyen.
The eBay for Business podcast is produced and distributed by Lipson and Podcast 411.
You say that so well. I think you should say it all the time.
I think I got a lot of good practice listening to you.